Ever wondered how premium, ready-to-drink cocktails are crafted? Join us as we uncover the secrets behind Wolf & Spirit Cocktail Company. Its founders share their journey of blending culinary arts and science to create luxury cocktails that redefine classic recipes. Don't miss out on this exclusive insight into the world of craft cocktails. All that and more on this episode of The Marketing Madmen.
They say marketing is a madman's game. So now we turn it over to The Marketing Madmen with Nick Constantino and Trip Jobe.
Happy Saturday. Welcome to The Marketing Madmen. Trip Jobe and Nick Constantino here live from The Battery. And man, we have got a spread laid out here today. It's a good thing it's Saturday. And we don't have any more work to do.
I mean, we're recording on a Wednesday, and it's actually 11 a.m., so this is going to be a more challenging day than I had planned. But, I wasn't supposed to say that. Yeah, sorry, keep going.
Anyhow, well, I think, obviously, what we've got in front of us is quite the cocktail spread. So we're excited, and we've got something new to the market that we're going to be talking about. So we have with us James Uricchi, who is CEO of Wolf and Spirit Cocktail Company. So I hope I said all that correctly, James. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, nailed my name too.
All right. Well, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Well, why don't let's. You're not from Atlanta either, so give us just a little bit about your background, so that before we kind of jump into to Wolf and Spirit.
So yeah, I grew up in Naperville, Illinois, which is a suburb about 28 miles outside of the city. So, like most people say, I'm from Chicago. So I'm actually from Naperville, but I've spent the last 20 years in the city, right downtown, and moved into the city when I was 21, and immediately started working the door at a bar, and that's kind of how I got into all of this. But all through my high school, I studied culinary, and I was really into the culinary arts until I went to a college to make a visit, and the first thing I heard when I walked in there was that if you want to make any money, find a different career path. And so
seems to be a recurring theme. Right, yes. Hey, I want to get into it. Don't.
Yeah, but I actually love it, and I have a passion for it, and I naturally understand balance and flavors, which is why this whole venture works out for us. But I was going to school for criminal justice, and it just kind of was dead end. And I did 2 years of school, and when I was 21, moved downtown, started working the door, and the rest is history. I from there, I was behind the bar, and I realized I can apply what I'm doing with cocktails, apply what I was doing with culinary arts to the cocktail space, and that it can be just as fun, and there's money there. I was making good money. So that's kind of how I got started with the whole cocktail industry and craft cocktails, and it was just a really unique time. There was a cocktail renaissance happening at the
time. And Chicago's in the core of all of this, right?
Oh, yeah, I mean, food and beverage in Chicago.
So I know New York has a lot more of like those traditional things, but Chicago was pushing those boundaries. That was like the gastronomy and the molecular gastronomy. Yeah. They were just, and then always, you couldn't be. It's not the same as New York. So they took a different course to it. But those old school, when you think old-timey cocktail lounge, you think Chicago.
Yeah.
When you think Prohibition.
Chicago
and like
Steakhouse.
Things,
I mean, the whole thing.
What do you mean, guy? Like, you think Chicago.
Well, you got like some of the top restaurants there too. Like Alinea is there. I mean, people come to eat and drink. Yep.
And
the bear's
helping a little bit because now everyone gets kind of that behind the scenes.
Oh yeah.
I wish season three was a little bit faster. I fell asleep twice already. But we'll save that for another time.
That's an interesting show. Yeah.
It is an interesting show. So we also have Amara Boras here, and you are the COO.
Yes.
So give us your quick background too, because I just want to try some of this stuff.
Of course. My background is kind of. It's completely different than James. I grew up in Chicago, and we met through mutual friends. And my background is in medicine, actually. So for the past 15 years, I've been focusing.
Now, are we saying medicine in the real sense, or are we saying medicine in like the whole sense, like a hot toddy, like to fix everything?
He's the person I call when I'm sick. I'm like, what do I do?
Which medicine are we talking about?
It's actual medicine. Yeah, so I
so you got a little chemistry in your background.
True. So. So I have a degree in chemistry, neuroscience, master's in neuroscience, and I focus heavily on just understanding like cognitive behavior.
Okay.
And
We need to talk after this.
I got to figure Nick out.
People are sober or when they're drunk. Because I feel like when they're drunk, right? Because in my head, I perform everything better when I am cognitively impaired, just personally. But
3 years now, and I haven't quite figured Nick out, I don't think. So
almost 42 years, and I haven't figured Nick out.
I can do it in a couple minutes.
So, challenge accepted. We're on. All right. So what we have in front of us, we have Wolf and Spirit. So before we get into any of this stuff, so what made you want to go down this road? What was lacking from the industry? What opportunity did you see? Why is it that you decide this is what I'm going to pursue and this is what I'm going to do?
So I need to be working on projects all the time. And COVID happened. And at the time that COVID happened, I had left my job running the bar program at the Langham Hotel Chicago, which is a wonderful place. And I learned so much there. I'm very, very thankful for them. And through that, I ended up in a job that I didn't think and would have never known it existed. I would tell myself that all the time. I was the mixology specialist representing the Moët Hennessy Spirits portfolio. And my job was to build out bar programs, identify which accounts within the city, so I had about 60 accounts, had the ability and capability to have an advanced bar program.
Yep.
And I would invest my time and resources into the trade, developing them, teaching them how to use the spirits.
Got it.
Teaching them how to price things on their menus, teaching them how things work so that it makes sense. Because people look at things very black and white sometimes, and they don't understand how to make the structures work.
So you're an external consultant for Moët Hennessy that would go into a place that had the capability to have that bar program but didn't have the staff to do it. You would go in and the return would be they would use Moët Hennessy cocktails for the services in which you're offering. So, menus, pricing, how do you take this next level? How do you match your cuisine? And now you're using a brand portfolio of Moët Hennessy brands, which is a huge brand portfolio. Most people think a couple things, but
I mean, it's a luxury. It's about as luxury as it gets. I mean, you got on the spirit side, you got Hennessy, which is one of the biggest brands in the world.
And cognac lends itself well to a lot of mixed drinks. People don't use it. They're starting to get back into it. But anything of bourbon, you can pretty much make with a cognac.
The thing about cognac is cognac was the brown spirit before whiskey. You know, then you had some things that happened in history, World War II, phylloxera, that set it back. It was about 200 years advanced on whiskey. So there's some things that happened in history that if we were to look back and it didn't happen, maybe things would be different. You know, we might be drinking brandy and cognac.
So major cities like a Chicago, like in Atlanta, what percentage of restaurant and bars would you say in general have that capability? They may not be doing it, but
probably changed in the past 5-10 years. 5-10 years ago, it was probably 30%, I would bet.
There was a lot pre-COVID. Like I said, I had 60 accounts, and they were all pushing the envelope. So they were all, and you were instantly seeing the results of the education that was going in, because we would do master classes, and we would bring in, the master blender from Hennessy to come sit down and do a master class on cognac. And I'm talking about a deep dive to where it's 2 hours long, and most people, it's tough to sit through that because it's just really heady. You know, there's a lot of information it's really science too. Yeah. What's going on. And it's history and it's a lot of stuff. And you learn about what makes a brand, you know, these are heritage brands. And so I learned a lot from that. And there's a lot of influence that you're going to see in what we're doing here. And the heritage brands, you know, anything that withstands the test of time, 250 years is long.
And so that's a great point. So again, that being said, those brands have existed. They've done things the right way. You see a whiskey renaissance, but it's those old school brands that are still the ones that are pushing the envelope. Yeah. So what made you decide, you know what, they're doing something wrong and there's opportunity for me to come out with these? What was it that you made you realize?
Don't think they're doing anything wrong, but I think that there is more opportunity to get the liquid to lips with a cocktail like this, right? Okay. So there's a lot of spirit brands out there. There's a lot of, say, tequila brands. So when you walk into we have Binny's in Chicago. I don't know what you guys have here as far as like a warehouse liquor. But you walk in and you're like, spirits, you look at the shelf and you're like, okay, which one am I buying?
Yeah.
So the opportunity to put that spirit and get somebody to drink it, this is a tool to do that for another brand, potentially, right? So it's like whatever you're using in these, they're now going to try that spirit. So I don't think they're doing anything wrong, but I think during COVID, I needed something to do. I needed to stay busy. I was like in hyperdrive. We had just done NBA All-Star Weekend in Chicago. Yeah. It was huge. We took over the old post office, 500,000 square feet. I mean, it's a huge place. We did a private party with Nas and ASAP Ferg and all these.
Yeah.
So all like we were going, and it was like I was on a roll, and then all of a sudden it stopped. And so I needed to keep going. I need to keep doing projects. Yeah. So that's my wife and I. I immediately started developing Bottled Cocktail. Okay. I'm like, how do I? And I, because of my time at the Langham Hotel, I spent a lot of time around pastry chefs and top people, chefs, and learned a lot of techniques, had access to a lot of equipment, ingredients, different compounds that you typically in behind a bar would never learn about. I spent most of my time in the kitchen with these guys learning. So I knew how to do shelf stability. I knew how to make these things. I knew how to run. I have a spins also. I was doing, which is a centrifuge.
Cool.
And kind of running things.
That's that molecular gastronomy.
Yeah.
Using it through a centrifuge.
So, like, you know, just playing around. So we really took the time, and we had nothing but time. So we did the science. You know, we spent 6 months getting it right, like dialing it in. And with so I'm just fortunate that I have the background that I do, and I realize that most people in a bar setting struggle to be able to get to learn things and have access to
the tools. So you have the real world experience. Right. You have the science experience. So talk about, let's not bore the audience, but let's talk about how science comes into this, because one of the things I understand is there's different things from fermentation to the way you blend, secondary fermentation. There are so many parts of the alcohol journey in which things can be mixed in and flavors can be put in. So talk briefly about how that science degree and that chemistry degree allows you to push the envelope and do things that maybe they traditionally weren't doing in freaking France in the 1800s.
Yeah, no, that's a fair question. Honestly, he would be more of the chemist. I may have a degree in chemistry, and I can dissect that, you know, every, you know, compound within this drink and break it down to a specific formula, you know, to make it make sense. But he's the person that actually puts
so
it together.
My understanding
the practical side is
still more important than the science. In the mixing, because so this is how I could think of it.
Kind of.
Everyone, you look at things, you look at marketing, right? Marketing still needs to elicit an emotional response. So it's more the art than the science, right? Digital advertising is not going to make an emotional connection with somebody. So I'm liking it here. You have the science background, but the art. So the blend of the two of you together is what gets us where we are, right? That's how we get to this point. So what is it? Again, so you're talking about mixing drinks.
Yeah.
Talk about what you're doing.
Okay. So with these cocktails, we're using all of the ingredients that are used in here are all made from natural products, right? Okay. So we work really closely with Rare Tea Cellar, which Roderick is a really good friend of mine. And he, over the years, he sources all the rare and unique ingredients from around the world. And he has freeze-dried everything. And like, so you have different elements, and you have access to elements that typically, like this is a freeze-dried grapefruit, right? So like this, this is not going to be readily available to most people, but when we're creating flavor components, we're using these real things to create those.
And now they're shelf-stable, like you said, because it's freeze-dried, it's in a bag, you're shelf-stable, which means you're not using fresh grapefruit, cutting it up, and this and then the flavor profile is completely different.
I want to come back to that. We need to run to the break real quick, but we'll kind of dive into how you're able to do that when we get back from the break. And you've been listening to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3.
Now back to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3 FM.
Welcome back to the Marketing Mad Men. Trip Jim and Nick Constantino here with James and Amar from Wolf and Spirit Cocktail Company, a premium ready-to-drink craft cocktail. And we were talking a little bit before the break about how you're able to provide and what you've done to make this, I guess, experience that most people normally wouldn't get. And I think from a chemistry and even understand what they should get.
I think it's a huge point, but before we get to the centrifuge, because I definitely want to hear about the centrifuge, talk about what the end result. Let's work backwards here. So the end result of all of this time-staking process that you've taken, the end result of having a chemist and all the experience you've had, what is the end result you were looking for? What is the end result you got? And then let's work backwards to talk about how you've gotten there, because it's different than the path most people take.
So refined craft cocktails that are influenced by classic cocktails. So classics is there's a reason they're around forever. Okay. So that's the base there. So we're taking things that you're familiar with currently.
Old fashioned Manhattan things, timeless cocktails. Yep.
Paloma, whiskey sour, Gimlet. Things that you're going to familiarize yourself with. And then we're refining those not only through the spirits we choose to use with those that are going to be the best and most reflective based on their taste profiles, but also with the ingredients that we're using to bring out some new and interesting flavors, some fun, you know, spice it up a little bit.
Sure. So a lot of people have that line, and they say that that's what they're trying to do. Now, talk about how you do it differently. Talk about the science and what goes behind it and the access that you have, that you're doing this such a different approach. Because, again, it's a canned line. Everyone says we're mixing these spirits, we're taking an old thing, and we're retwisting it. Talk about why you're different.
Okay, so everything is dialed in. Everything is 100% handmade ingredients and used and created using the highest quality.
Yeah.
Premium ingredients that we can find. We're not cutting any corners there. Like we are, I aim to be a premium product, and we want to fall in the luxury category. We see that there's some other brands that have really set up the space for the RTDs to now have the premiumization happen. Okay. People are paying for these things, so we're ready to do that. And you know, so we're creating the ingredients, utilizing techniques and equipment and tools that I had access to and was very fortunate to have had access to working at the Langham Hotel Chicago with all of their wonderful hospitality professionals that they brought on to set that place up and make it what it was. And at the time, it was the number one luxury hotel in the country. I mean, it was such an experience to be able to do that. So, and I'm very fortunate that I got to do that. And so that's how we're recreating these ingredients. We're working with our partners, like I said, Rare Tea Cellars. They're only sourcing the highest quality ingredients.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, the vinegars that we're using in two of our cocktails are imported from France, and they're distilled 11 times. And, I mean, it's like nothing you've ever tasted before.
So let's go into that, because I've never even heard of vinegar being used in a cocktail. So I know the acidic profile, I know what you're getting out of it. I know that there's grape components. There's so many different things. So why are you using vinegar? Which cocktail is? And talk about that cocktail.
Like, naturally.
And let's pour it, because I want to try
this. Naturally.
Now I'm intrigued.
Yes.
Vinegar is, how do you make vinegar? It's on the shelf. I mean, it's not good. It's shelf stable.
Yeah.
Right. And it's now you have your citrus, which is going to be the thing that's going to probably oxidize quickest out of anything we're using here. So how
and
do
then it'll expire, right? A lemon on the counter will expire. Vinegar should not, as long as you keep it the right way.
The vinegar is going to be, you know, it's never going to go bad. Yeah. It's going to, I mean.
It almost just re-vinegarizes itself. It just keeps going.
That's how vinegar is created. Yeah. So what we're going to do
is. Go on with the chemistry.
It's just through its oxidative
So we're going to do the banana date whiskey sour.
Banana date whiskey sour. Okay.
Yep. And so we're using a high rye bourbon here.
So it's got some heat on it up front too.
Yeah, and it's got some nice, rich caramel flavors, some oak, and really rich. It's a great, great five-year-old bourbon. But we're also using a banana liqueur that is really, really nice. And then we're using the date vinegar. It's called Jean-Marc date vinegar, and it's incredible. It's like a creamy flavor, and you're going to see why we use it here. And we use a very small amount to get what we're doing, and then it's citrus. So it's very simple. We're not complicating things. We're keeping it simple. We're not adding no extra chemicals or anything like that to make it self-sample. So I'll go ahead and pour this.
Sure. Yeah, those are not things you hear often, though. Banana and date vinegar in a whiskey sour is just not something you hear often. So that's why, and I understand the flavor profile completely, and I'm excited to have it, but I also understand how,
this
like,
is about your favorite thing.
You're going after a luxury and advanced palate with that. Because most people that are looking at the liquor shelf aren't like, you know what I really need today? A banana and data. Oh, and you got the freeze-dried fruits to put it in.
These are going to be like, this is how I would, if you're going to be at home, you want to garnish, you want to make it look good. And if you're like me, like I make everything, when I'm making anything for myself or my wife, I make it look like it.
Yeah.
My presentation is most important.
You're a better man than I. I put some ice in a glass and some whiskey and I drink it.
So as part of that, how do you help the consumer understand how to garnish it and finish the drink?
That's how we're, so that's what I'm working on with Rare Tea Cellars on, and I package this kind of stuff up by myself, but we're working on putting together kits where you can buy it and you can have your garnishes that will come along with it.
Almost like attached to the bottle.
And another thing that's not going to go bad, freeze dried. So like you can take this with you if you're going camping and you want to have a cocktail.
Instant differentiated.
Yeah. Yep.
Instant differentiated.
Also an extensive amount of education, right? A QR code you could just scan. It's going to lead to a YouTube video of him actually making the cocktail.
Yeah, we're going to have our YouTube channel going. We're going to do the cordials as well. So everything that I'm making to go into these cocktails, I would like to create. And if you want to be a mixologist at home and you want to have fun and you want to use those cordials and do something different, or if you have a different spirit that you think would be interesting, We want you to get creative. We want you to have fun with it. Yep.
Like I can tell you right now, automatically, just from the way you pour this, a mezcal would probably go well with this.
Love mezcal.
It would go well with this. Just from what you told me.
We actually have a drink with mezcal.
But I'm saying so that. But
I won a competition with mezcal. Yeah. When I first started doing this tequila, I'm like, I don't know anything. I don't know how to make a cocktail with tequila. By the end of it, I was winning competitions with tequila and mezcal. So it's my favorite thing.
But you're doing the education. So in theory, you're almost risking the cannibalization, because if they enjoy making this, they're not going to buy your stuff. But you're so about the product that you know you're going to make something better than they are, that you're offering the bartending, the lessons, the product, the garnish that comes with it. Like, let's say I'm having a party and I want to pretend I'm fancy. I can just take your stuff, make these drinks, and be like, look what I do.
Well, you'll do that about once. So, because what you'll find out when that happens is, like, when I had my wedding, I did cocktails, and I ended up making cocktails the entire time. So you're going to do that one time, and then you're going to buy the bottle.
I was the worst DJ. I used to DJ, and then I'd be like, I'm not DJing. I want to go party with everybody. Yeah, this sucks.
Exactly.
This sucks.
How was that? Your first taste? I saw that.
It's good. It was very good.
Oh, yeah. My God. It is. Hey. Yeah. The banana is actually smells much more than I thought it would. Right. It even sneaks its way through.
What kind of bothered me about the market in general was relatively simple. I went to my buddy's house. He's a huge, he's a millionaire in Atlanta, lives off Northside. And I go into his house. He's like, hey, what can I get you to drink? And I was like, what do you got? And he's like, would you like a High Noon? I was like, is that the best you can offer me? And I was like,
really?
Is that the best you can offer me? And I was like, all right. So there is a market for this where, people who want to have a premium drink and offer it to, their friends and families and
guests. I love the bag. I love, if you serve this with these garnishes attached to it and make it that turnkey, you're automatically stand out on the shelf. And if people go, and then if you have a QR code as to explains why you did that, you're immediately differentiated. And a smart liquor store will put it up front because you're probably charging a premium too, which is what they want ultimately. So, I mean, I'm in. The cinnamon and the banana. Yeah. I mean, you get a punch of banana, but banana is such a subtle flavor that it doesn't do much.
It's so rich. I mean, every time I have it, the flavor is, sometimes you have, like, I've had some other RTDs, and not that any of them are bad, and everybody has their place, but it's like, it doesn't have that, like, I took just a small sip, and I'm still getting flavor right now. So it's like, places. That's great. You know, then that's exactly what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And that's we work so hard to get those flavors right and spend the time to do that.
But they blend together when you try it. Sometimes people give all these different things and they operate on their own. This thing, from the banana to the cinnamon, and then you actually smell the ass. And I know that sounds crazy, but you smell, probably because of the vinegar, right? You can get that acid palate on there. So.
Oh, yeah, the vinegar, it's nice and it's creamy, so this is very rich. And then, like, the cinnamon.
This is one of the richer drinks.
The cinnamon cordial that's in this, this is three different types of cinnamon that we're using, that we're running on a sous vide, and we're pulling all these flavors out, but you're getting a complexity to your cinnamon syrup that you appreciate, but you don't even know that it's there. Then that's the idea. It's like, it's just good. We just want it to be good, but those type of things are taking that and making this that much better.
Yeah, I love it. So just on first taste, I mean, you had a market here, right? We're going after a luxury market. We're going after people who are stupid enough to have High Noons in their house and think they're impressing people with those things. Exactly. We're going after people who don't necessarily want to make these themselves or freeze-dry fruit themselves.
Or so some of these people don't have time.
They don't have time. So we have a market. Yeah. So let's talk about the market now. So what do you do? It's also a hyper-competitive space. What are the plans to penetrate the market? Let's talk about outside of Atlanta even, Chicago. What do you do to penetrate the market? What does your marketing look like? Do you go with influencers? Are you going to use social media? Obviously, you have PR in place. Talk about what some of the marketing plans are, because as good as the product is to be, you got people to get people to try it the first time. So talk about the marketing plans. Talk about some of the strategies that you plan on implementing to get this in people's hands, because I agree with you. I think once you try it the first time, you're going to be a pretty consistent user.
Yeah, so my strategy is an organic one, based on my experiences and with brands and what impacts the consumer the most. And so what I see is doing a tour in any place that we're launching and being present, speaking with people, letting them try it, talking directly with them, and maybe if that means getting ambassadors that will work with us too, so that we can have a further reach. But it's really about getting that liquid to lips and talking about it with people, because once you try it, it's hard to not want to, if you're looking for something like this. Once you try it, you're not going to go anywhere else.
I think it's an old school roadshow.
Yeah, I think that's the most, I mean, that's what we were doing with these brands that are been around forever. That's how they're doing it. And then strategic partnerships, obviously, with influential people. I think that that's important too, and I think that that's down the line, and I think that we're setting ourselves up to be able to do that. It's just aligning. If we're going to do influencers, it's aligning with the right influencers. You know, we don't want. It's not about just flooding the market and making it crazy.
Like, and we think that's the biggest problem. People just go right now. They go to these influencers. They want that initial rush, but then all of a sudden they just go to the next thing, and everyone's moving. Like it was White Claw, and then it was Vizzy, and then it was High Noon, and then all of a sudden you think like 10 years has passed. It's been like a year and a half, and it's already on to the next thing. So how do you build that long term brand presence? That one's a little harder. And I think you're right. If you approach it by just flooding the market, then all you're going to do is make short term fans and never look at the long term. I think you have to be a long term. But again, it is a very, very busy market. And you saw that from Moët Hennessy. I mean, there were times where Hennessy lost grounds to other people, and whiskey came out, in fact, as opposed to... The trends are crazy.
Tequila came out of nowhere, and tequila is the category now.
And I've been told that gin was going to come for the past 10 years. I still see no gin revolution. I don't... Last time you say this, everyone's like, gin's coming.
It's been tequila.
Gin's coming, guys. Gin's coming.
We only see the one where, we've got the ultimate marketer, Mr. Reynolds. But other than that, you really don't see gin
behind the bar, when you're... When everybody behind the bar, that's what we're drinking, is gin. I still drink gin, but that's in the community, the professionals, the industry professionals, they're drinking gin for sure. Yeah. That's a huge category. But, most people, like my mother, they're drinking vodka. And gin is very closely related to that. Sure. It's a neutral grain spirit with, botanicals. Yeah. So it's always been there. I don't think you're going to, and it's popular still. I mean, my grandfather used to carry around a briefcase in the trunk. And every day at 4 o'clock, it was happy hour. And there was Tanqueray, martinis, and popcorn wherever they were at. And that's old school. And they were drinking gin back then. So gin's gone.
That's Mad Men, man. That's what we named the show after.
It is crazy.
Hold on. Right. But now you have it pre-made and everything, so it's even easier.
This is great.
Back to your point, the liquid to lips is critical, right? We could have a huge online presence.
Yeah.
And we could do everything right in that category, but if we're not out there actually talking to people and provide, like this one drink, right? Let's say you only had this one drink. The quality is there, which makes you think, all right, these guys have four other drinks out. I got to see what they're worth.
I got to at least try them
because of the quality of this one drink that I tasted.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's really hard too, right? One of the things I know for the state of Georgia, it is almost illegal to sample. Like, you can't even be in a liquor store because they have to have separate licenses. Yeah. So they have to have a different license to have a store adjacent to it. Like Tower, they can do it because they have a secondary store with a secondary license that they're allowed to sample. They make it really hard in some places to get that liquor.
It's crazy. Like in Illinois, it's a three-tier system. So like the way that they have to structure things to get things done. Like I never provided a price for anything. I mean, I was in those accounts every single day, but when they asked for pricing, I had my partners,
my sales reps, the wholesale partners.
They'll get, so that it's just, you're working together. It's different in every state. That's what we were just talking
about.
It's crazy here.
It's a franchise state. It is hard to move around from distributors. You cannot sample. They make it real hard. And honestly, if I'm being fair, we make quite a living off of it because we learn the nuances of how to do it. So we do events and stuff where we sample.
That's what, like, I was going to say. You hire a catering company that's going to then do an event.
That takes on the liquor license. We have a private party. We rope it off. You're supposed to uphold the three-tier system. But honestly, I've dealt with all these people. It's freaking taxes, man. Yeah. Everyone just wants their money, which pisses me off because they're like, dude, I'll cut you a check for those taxes. Now, I don't care. I don't need to use the three-tier system because most people just want to sample. They want to get things in people's hands. They want to spread the love, and it makes it so complicated.
Yeah, you just want to share.
It's so complicated. I never understood it.
So how are you approaching Georgia then? What are you thinking?
So this is my first time out here. So that's what I'm out here to do. We're gonna see. So we're going to meet with the distributors here.
Good.
And I'm going to learn a little bit about how they're operating because I've never been here, like I said. And then I do understand how things work based on my history, my background. And so it's going to be interesting. I'm going to learn, and then we'll be able to assess. So I'm going to spend some time, and we're going to – because this is where we're going to launch the market here. Before we even bring it to Chicago, we're going to do it here. It's going to be great. We're going to work some things out here, and it's going to be – I think Atlanta's going to be a great market. I think it's a nice city, and I think it's probably progressive enough.
I do have a strong connection with the liquor industry here.
Good.
I'm sure you heard of Tongue and Groove.
Of course.
Right? Okay, so I was their head of security – in undergrad, right, for about 7 years.
Oh my goodness.
And I worked there as a bouncer, as the front door guy.
So a guy with a chemistry engineer is also a bouncer.
Exactly.
They don't write that one. So no, our sister company is Modern Luxury Jezebel and the Atlantan. Yeah. So every time they had a party at Tongue and Groove, I used to go hang with them. So I know it well. So the one thing I will say about Atlanta, if I had to give the only piece of advice, and I'm a Yankee, so I'm a New Yorker, so Atlanta is still new to me. The first and most important thing is college football and tailgating.
Yeah.
The number one important thing, if you want to have a spirit brand, understand that those Saturdays are probably more important than Sundays, and you have to build your repertoire. If you can make these packets, like tailgate package, branded with like the team and something where they can bring with them to a tailgate and pour, you win Atlanta, because they want convenience, but they also want to show off in front of their friends. People show up at 8 o'clock in the morning, spend $10,000 for a space to show off to people.
I see what people do on Lake Lanier. You know, and it's kind of the same concept, right? They get on boats. They, you know, if only they had a drink that was, you know, premium enough to be able to show off, and convenient enough also that they wouldn't have to, take 10 minutes to make a whole drink.
It's that southern
it's
lifestyle.
That convenience factor.
It's not the summer here. It's not like Chicago. Where you got your 100 days of summer. It's July. And it's so hot out. Everyone's like, get this over. By August, everyone's like, I'm over summer. They are dying for college football season, and they're dying for really Saturdays in the fall. So, and I think a lot of these flavor palettes really match the fall well. The Paloma's your summer drink, but what we're drinking right now, this screams fall to me.
It works. In the summer, because it is a sour, so it's like some people's palate will enjoy it. But yeah, it is a fall cocktail. Yeah, and we're going to be doing these. So originally we did six cocktails, but we're just going to start with the four, because we don't want to
keep the skews down and make it easy.
Give people a chance to figure out what direction.
I agree.
And it will give us a chance to go, wow, people, we should keep going this direction if this is what people enjoy, you know, make sure that we're putting the product out there that people want, and not just what we want to put out there.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you guys, so what are you most excited about? So we're getting rolling. You have the brand built. I saw the brand kit. I mean, you have the brand built. And that is something that a lot of people do very wrong, is they kind of do the brand kit on the fly. And if you're launching a brand that you believe in, you better have that kit ready to go, because that consistency is as important as anything else in the world is.
I am like OCD about the brand, right? And what...
That's got to be that Moët Hennessy, because I've seen their brand guides and their
Langham. I mean, the standards are just like, it is not, everything is, it's not subjective. It's objective. It's what we do. This is what it is to be operating in the luxury space, right? And have anticipatory service, and we, the way we are and we operate is just, it's how this team does things. It's not how you do things or I do things.
These towels are folded this way. This is your color pad for them. This is this. That's why when you have seven stars, it's like the trim around the door has something to do with it. These are, like you said, I love that line. It's objective. It's not subjective. This is not open to interpretation. Do this or else is pretty much how it goes.
Yeah, and it's like you have a set of standards and you meet those standards.
Yeah, and because Chad sent me the brand guide, and that is pretty intense for a brand that hasn't launched yet to have such an in-depth guide of what goes where and all that stuff. It's good. I commend you guys for it, because a lot of people do it backwards. But so you've launched your brand. What are you most excited about over the next, call it 6 months?
Getting to get out and learn other markets and interact with the consumers in other markets. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I see Wolf and Spirit as something bigger than just a cocktail brand, although it is the cocktail company.
Sure.
I see it as a lifestyle brand. I think that, like I said, we're going to be doing the cordials, and I want to do some other things as well with it and continue to grow that. So, and I'm excited about being able to do that, but just getting it out there and letting people try it.
Yeah.
I've been working on this since 2020. You know, I've not rushed it by any means.
Yeah.
We did the development. We've gotten it right. Before I've even shown it to anybody, I've changed the label 3 times. You know, and it's gotten better and better. And refinement is the name of the game for me. So it's like we're constantly refining it. And when I finally release it to the market, it's going to be perfect. It's the only way to be, and when we're going to keep those standards. And that's what's been fun too, working with Amar. My wife and I did a lot of this together. She gets me. She spent a lot of time with me. She's learned what's acceptable and what's not, and what she can get away with, and what the brand standards are. And Amar has picked it up pretty quickly as well. We've been working together on this for like the last year and a half, and I'd say now it's starting to come together. You can see I can tell how much he's learned over the year, just spending the time with me.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of back and forth. It's like, what do you think about this? And just and
you
so now we're getting everybody to understand what the brand standards are. And it's not what I personally want. It's what it needs to be for it to be in the category we want it to be in and be able to.
You only get one shot at that. When you launch at that price point, you only get one shot at that. Yeah. Because what people do, if you go too low or too high, you've lost it. You can't start too high and then drop your price because then you're never premium. And you can't start too low and raise your price because it takes long to change that price perception in people's mind. So you only get one shot at that. And I've seen that botched before where people, I mean, unless you're sitting there in one of these big brands, right? You remember when Svedka came out, it was like $11 for a bottle of Svedka. And yeah, they sold the crap out of Svedka because it was an $11 bottle of vodka. Then all of a sudden it gets in that $20 range. It's like, who the hell's drinking Svedka? So I don't know why that one just stands out to me. Maybe I just bought a lot of Svedka.
I want to see, you know, I want to see it. I want to see it be a legacy brand. I want this to be something that can live on, and maybe 150 years from now, it's still going. Like we want, I want that.
Yeah.
So how do we do that? It just takes time. You know, it takes time in the details that most people don't even notice. It's things like the layers of the cinnamon, right? That we don't even talk about.
Yeah.
But we're doing it because it's important and it's going to make a difference. Those are the things that are going to separate us. And like I said, we're doing those things without. mainly talking about those things. But I think it's you know, we want to stand out and we want to go the extra mile. We don't want to just say we're going to do it. We want to actually do it. I want to actually put the time in. Like, and if we make a mistake, we go back and we correct the mistake. And if we, you know, those things are important. And so, I mean, it's...
I love it. And look, we're going to come back from the break and we're going to have a little bit of conversation about what we think the liquor industry, the spirit industry looks like over the next couple of years, because I think we'll see how you fit in there. But you've been listening to Marketing Madman on Extra 106.3 and we'll be right back.
Now back to the Marketing Madman on Extra 106.3 FM.
All right, welcome back to the Marketing Madman. Nick Constantino and Tripp had a sudden flare-up of a disease I won't talk about right now. So I'm hosting the show. So we got James and Amar from Wolf and Spirit, and let's talk luxury, because I think this is one of the most understood, hard things to nail when you're talking about marketing or a product launch, right? So to be a true luxury brand, your separation from the mid-tier has to be pronounced, clear, and the delta has to be big enough for people. So give you an example. When we had the last great recession, and this could even be COVID to some extent, when things really hit the fan, steakhouses were fine, McDonald's was fine, Applebee's got screwed. That mid-level tier, because those people traded down, right? The Ruth's Chris people didn't trade to Applebee's. They stayed with Chris. So how do you nail that delta? How do you establish yourself as a luxury good whose price is justified? Because at the same time, you're also closing the amount of people you're reaching with your market share. So I'm sure you guys have had in-depth discussions. I'm sure your experience at the hotel, this is all this was about, right? How do you nail that? And again, if you guys give me the best answer in the world, I'm going to steal it and use it, because nobody gets this right on the first try. Talk about your plans to nail that delta between that luxury brand, because it is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, and I think you hit it right on the head with the restaurant during COVID. I think another category you see it in is automobiles right now. You've seen this happen there too. They've either gone luxury. You see a really, like, what do you see in your base model now? I mean, it's all the bells and whistles. You're like, everything is luxury. Everything has had to step it up or they're gone.
Yeah.
We've seen the brands go that have been around forever.
Yeah.
So it happens. And so what's most important is your integrity of your brand, right? And putting your money where your mouth is, right?
Yeah.
And really, like I said, it's going the extra mile.
Putting not cutting corners.
Putting the time and effort into the details that are really important, that most people don't take the time to do. They don't want to waste the time doing it. No, you have to put that in there. Taking the time to understand your consumer.
Yeah.
Right?
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the avatar. So who is the guy? So you could talk for Chicago because you guys are just getting to Atlanta, but who is the person? What is their job? What does their family life look like? Who is that consumer you're looking after? Who is that avatar?
You know, I think it's a wide range. I think it can be any age demographic. It's a person that likes, I'm trying to think of the right word.
So first though, I think the experience is important, right? You're not drinking to just sit at your house and drink whiskey, because anybody can do that. So this is experiential. So they're either having friends over, they're entertaining, or like them and their wives have date night where they spend all this time cooking. They're not just going to sit there and drink whiskey out of a bottle. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's what I do on a Saturday night, but it's completely what I do on a Saturday night. But anyway,
the person that appreciates higher quality and that really has an appreciation for things that are of higher quality, right? Yeah, so they're willing to spend the money on the.
So I'll give you an example, right? A Patek Philippe costs $250,000. Tells time the exact same way that a $6 Timex does, right? You're not buying a Patek Philippe because you need to tell accurate time, because a $6 watch can do that, a phone can do that. You're doing it because you appreciate the engineering, and it is worth something to you, the thought, time, and effort that went into building something and the pedigree and heritage that built.
Yep, exactly.
So that customer, so I'm assuming, like you said,
it's the brand history.
Say what it's worth, a Ford and a freaking Mercedes are different things, right? No one's going to ever compare those things. You're buying a Mercedes, and to be honest with you, the highest level Ford and the entry level Mercedes are probably really similar, but there's no name pedigree behind a Ford. You're buying a Mercedes because you want those things. So,
and it's like the little, it's the nuance. I mean, and I'm a, everything I enjoy very many things. And I think it's a product of being at the Langham.
Yeah.
And putting the attention to like the details that you wouldn't even take the time, because it's called anticipatory service, right?
Yeah.
So it's like this perfect thing is happening, and you're like, everything's perfect, and you don't know why, but you're like, every time I go there, it just feels good. And everything.
Yeah, because they're working their asses off.
But
to
nothing
make it
stands
that way.
Out in particular. Right. It just is.
But if it stood out to you, then it wouldn't be the same experience. The fact that it's catching you off guard with it is what makes it such a powerful.
Well, so like there, that's Forbes 5-star, right?
Yeah.
As a Forbes partner, and I worked closely with Forbes. They would come in, I would train with them. They called us their partners. That's how it's all in the language. It's how they speak to you, right? They say, you guys are our partners, right? And this is as a guy that was behind the bar who was like, when I would tell my family, my aunt, my uncle, or I had an uncle, like, would give me a hard time. I'd be like, I'm a bar, I'm doing this mixology. He's like, yeah, okay, you're working behind a bar. And I'm like, not taking it. And then you got the guy at Forbes telling you, you're my partner.
Yeah.
We care. Which carries
a name pedigree.
Yes.
The Forbes name, for what it's worth, is still one of those names that is associated with the luxury lifestyle and what you're talking about.
Oh, I mean, right. Within 5 minutes of you sitting down at my bar, I have 60 points that I need to touch in order to pass the test. So, like, I'm getting your name. I'm using your name 3 times. I'm putting, and all the while, you don't even notice it's happening.
Yeah.
It's effortless. And that's the magic of it all, right? So now we want to take that and we want to apply it to everything we do. That's what I try to apply that to everything I do.
A good way to say it is that when you spend money on something that justifies the price, you feel like it's worth the value in which it is. So that's a big thing, right? Value versus price, right? Price is never a conversation. It's the value that's provided. You are providing value, especially if we start talking about putting this bag in this thing, this bottle is out on a store, you're checking all the boxes, it's curated, it's already done for you. The price is irrelevant. It's the value in which you're providing. When you stay at the Langham Hotel, it's not the price that you paid, it's the value in which you're providing. The services you offer is the value.
The details within that service.
You have people that are like, take my money, I wanna go, like, and you have people that go there for a staycation because it's expensive to stay there. It is. I couldn't do it if I wanted to. You know, like it's a special occasion you're doing that. So it's like people are willing to do that though because they know they're going to go there and they're going to leave there and they're going to be happy. It's very common nowadays.
Yes.
The details of the service that make it exceptional. I saw you pick up the cinnamon stick. You know how many different types of cinnamon that we use in a sous vide to make one of the cordials? Almost 5 or 6.
Wow.
And different types of cinnamon.
Yeah. But unfortunately, there's a million people in the world that don't even know that there's more than one type of cinnamon.
100%. And it's these details you just don't know about.
There's one that's not actually even cinnamon. There's two categories.
Yeah.
One that we're eating regularly that's not actually cinnamon. But that's another story.
I think one of the things I've learned is these are things that you age into, right? Yeah. It's akin to, I made it in a previous show, but like, When I was 22 years old, I shopped at H&M, right? Because it's fast fashion. But then I realized that piece of crap shirt was broken 2 days later. And if I had just bought a $50 shirt, it would have lasted longer and the value would have been there. You understand value proposition.
Timelessness is
important. Timelessness. You age into these things, right? I have a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. My time socially is so minimal that I will put more money to my social time because I'm chasing freaking kids around all the time. You age. I think you age and you mature into these things and you change your drinking habits and your patterns.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Who you spend your time around to and where the direction that you're and how serious you take yourself and the people that you surround yourself with. But also, like, the brand story is extremely important and the connection that you can have with your audience through your brand story.
And you can't fake it. Too many people try to make, and liquor is the worst. If you read the story of some of these bourbons, like, this was the third cousin of Jack Daniel's second aunt, and he was a slave, but his mother was a seamstress, and she made the first ever bottle of bourbon. I go, what the hell does that have to do with anything that I'm drinking?
Because they think it's relevant, right?
They think it's relevant, but it's so fake. That's not a real story.
What they do is they go down and they find a distillery or whatever they're using, and they're buying that.
They'll
use the history of that distillery, say it's 200 years old, to say this brand is 200 years
this
old.
This tequila is 500 years old, and Montezuma used it. No, all tequila comes from the same place. Like, it's legal. It's a law.
But the brand story is very, very important, and with Wolf and Spirit, the wolf is representative of a survivor, which is what we were going to do during COVID, no matter what. I was furloughed. It was time was going by. My wife and I were like, we were riding bikes a lot, and then it was like, we're still riding bikes a lot, and we're not going back to work. And I was riding one day, and I'm thinking, this is just going to be life? Like, this is what we're going to do? And I'm like, I can't do just this.
And that's how it came to fruition, because he was there, and during COVID, I was working 18-hour shifts at the hospital. I was draining my life, and I took a couple-day vacation, went to Chicago to see some family.
And how you introduced
I met up with him. I saw the bottle, and I was like, what is this?
So step back, Amar and I have known each other since we were 17 or 18 years old.
Wow.
We didn't see each other for a decade.
Oh, my God.
He comes to my house with a really good friend, mutual friend of ours.
Ricky.
And I show him this. And then he continued to call me about it. That's how I knew that this is going to be a good partnership right here. I'm like, I'm at a point where I was working so much because they brought me back to work. And so this kind of got shelved. And I'm like, I need help. And the fact he was calling me, I'm like, let's do this. I want to help you. I want to do it. So this is
the leap of faith.
Fast track a year and a half later.
The leap of faith.
Where we're at. Like,
the leap of faith.
We're here talking to you.
So talk about Spirit. So we got Wolf. Talk about Spirit.
Yeah. So the Spirit is it's a play on the words, but obviously there's a spirit in there. But it's just the spirit of the brand, you know.
Like,
but it's also a play on the words, and so the spirit is the drive that we have to continue to put an effort into making sure that we keep our quality and standards at the highest level.
Yeah, I get it. A spirit's almost what fills the bottle, right?
Yeah.
The wolf is the driving force. The spirit is almost what fills it. When you think about a person, you're just a shell. The spirit. Damn, that was pretty good,
the wolf is.
I just win that one.
Have you ever seen a wolf go hungry? It doesn't do it.
No,
they
doesn't
survive. They eat.
Yeah. Doesn't do
they,
it.
They provide. They do what they got to do, no matter what. And listen, I've
and they don't bother themselves with the people around them. They're not worried about what's happening around them. All right, so we got about a minute left. So talk about what people should look for. Where they're going to find you, where to find information. Do we have social handles? Are we getting the prime pump? Talk about where people can look to find you guys.
Yeah, so we do, for our socials, we're Wolf and Spirit. For Instagram, there's a Facebook.
It's across the board,
okay, across
Wolf
the board,
and Spirit.
Cool. Just Wolf and Spirit. You can start to, like, we want to, the off-premise is going to be our first.
Yeah.
First approach. So start to look for us. I'm sure it's going to be it's going to be in Atlanta when we launch it here. So that's,
but you did make a point to, you know, tailgating. So we are going to make a strong effort to, you know, meet up with colleges and these tailgating parties and groups, as well as golf courses. And,
smart.
You know,
that's where you want to be, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we just want to get out there and activate, you know, like, and get out there and be with around people and like I said, get the product in.
And you might see me standing outside a Tongue and Groove handing out bottles, so you know.
There you go. That'll do it. All right. Well, guys, I appreciate it. They've been wonderful. Both cocktails that I had, I probably have another one, have been wonderful. You've been listening to the Marketing Madman on Extra 106.3, and we will catch you next week.